Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Paul Ryan hits the campaign trail this week. Medicare takes the spotlight. Afghan allies kill more Americans. Wildfires keep coming. The VP nod from Mitt Romney went to Ryan, and Ryan went right to work.
You're either part of the problem or part of the solution. Well, regrettably, President Obama has become part of the problem, and Mitt Romney is the solution.
Joe Biden on the trail, too, talking shackles and chains as he went controversially after Mitt Romney with a largely African-American crowd in Virginia.
He said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put you all back in chains.
And long lines of the young and undocumented this week to sign up for 2 years of legal status in the USA. Here's Carla Clara. Her family came from El Salvador.
Many people that disagree with this talk about we're not Americans, but in my heart I am. I grew up here. I've been here since elementary school. This is the only place I know.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Nia Malika Henderson of The Washington Post, Ginger Gibson of Politico, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation. How's Ryan hitting you? What's your take on gutter talk in the campaign, Medicare, immigration changes, our Afghan allies, all our wildfires? Is Mother Nature saying, can you hear me now? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington, hot off the campaign trail this week, first with Mitt Romney, then with Joe Biden, is Nia Malika Henderson, national political reporter for The Washington Post. Nia Malika, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Hey there, Tom. It's good to be here.
And with us from Arlington, Virginia, is Ginger Gibson, national political reporter for Politico. She's been following the Romney campaign for months. Ginger, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Nia, and Ginger.
All right, Ginger, you've been with Romney for a long time. Let's just step back. We've got a lot to look at here, but big picture, how do you see the Paul Ryan nod for the vice presidency from Mitt Romney? A week ago this time, none of us knew about it. Now it's been a fact for almost a week. How's it affecting the campaign?
You saw Mitt Romney excited, energetic, and drawing much bigger crowds on the campaign trail this week. The pick of Paul Ryan seemed to give him a boost. Campaign told us on Monday that it was going to be the last day that he and Paul Ryan were together, and now they're saying that they're going to be back again this Monday campaigning in New Hampshire and possibly again somewhere in the Midwest later in the week. We've seen Mitt Romney get really excited about the pick. He's excited about the crowds that they're drawing, and it's had a real effect on him on the stump.
Nia Malika, what about the campaign overall? Big picture, we've got a lot of elements to look at, but where's the energy moving here?
Well, I think I agree with Ginger. The energy for now, I think, is on Romney's side. You saw those big crowds. I think for a while there was a sense that this campaign was taking on water over the summer. They were only able to go on offense when those job numbers were released, and then they weren't even able to really seize on that to really talk about jobs consistently. I think one of the issues now is that they're pivoting, obviously, to Medicare. They're pivoting to this Ryan plan, and you see that Mitt Romney is having to obviously want to embrace some of the energy that Ryan has brought to this campaign, but he is treading lightly on the Ryan plan, this Ryan budget plan that Democrats want to frame as gutting Medicare. So it's an interesting time, and I also think you obviously hear Mitt Romney at this point really pointing to some of the negativity and trying to draw down some of the likability numbers that you've seen so high and such a huge gap between he and Obama. So it's an interesting race, and we're, you know, obviously about a week before this convention kicks off in Tampa. And so there is a real, I think, insistence on the part of these campaigns that they really excite the base going into these conventions.
Jack Beatty, there's a lot of talk that the Obama campaign sort of prayed for Paul Ryan to be the pick for Mitt Romney's VP, that he'd be so conservative that it would work to the Democrats' favor. How's that looking, Jack?
Well, the bounce, the vice presidential bounce, which is usually about 4%, according to Nate Silver of the New York Times, is a net of about 1% for Mr. Ryan thus far. So not doing so well there. On the other hand, Wisconsin, which was clearly Democrat-leaning up to just a week ago, is now rated a toss-up by CNN. So he seems to have helped in Wisconsin. But at the macro level, I think this was on the Romney campaign, a perhaps shrewd adaptation to something that's happened. And that is, there are just so few voters who haven't made up their mind. Only 1 in 10 of likely voters say they could change their minds. That means it has got to be a base campaign. If that's what you want, if that's what you have to do, the man to energize the Republican base is Paul Ryan.
A base campaign, that means not going for the swing vote. That means not going to the middle, the traditional path. Once we get to this point in a campaign, we'll look at how that is affecting all kinds of issues and the conversation. Mitt Romney had taxes right back in front of him. There's a lot more this week, but let's deal with that one first. Here he was in Greer, South Carolina, yesterday with reporters. He reaffirmed his position that he's not going to show more of his tax returns. But he also said yesterday that he's never paid less, was it, than 13%. And he said we ought to be talking about other things.
Given the challenges that America faces, 23 million people out of work, Iran about to become nuclear, 1 out of 6 Americans in poverty. The fascination with taxes I paid, I find to be very small-minded compared to the broad issues that we face. But I did go back and look at my taxes, and over the past 10 years, I never paid less than 13%.
Rich guy, a lot of money in the bank, made it, how we made it. Jack, fair or not fair for people to keep asking about those taxes? Is Mitt Romney right? We should move on.
Well, it does seem to me that he crystallized in that. That was one of the best sound bites, I think, of his campaign, because I think a lot of people must feel that way. Enough already. He won't release anymore. That's that. Now, he used the word small-minded. Well, that, of course, applies then to about 20, Bigfoot GOP conservative journalists and Republican politicians who said release the taxes. My sense is that now stops, because now you've essentially got the man saying, here's my word on it. And if anything should come out to prove that wrong, well, that would really be a problem. I think that may help to remove this issue from the campaign.
Maybe. On the other hand, Ginger, I mean, we have so much money in politics, and now it's right in the candidate himself. I mean, what if he was worth $1 billion? What if he was worth $50 billion? Is there not a point at which people deserve to know, and certainly historically people have had more of a sense, of what's up with the candidate's finances?
This is an issue that's not going to go away from Mitt Romney. As long as those tax returns are not released, Democrats are going to be talking about them. And it's something that candidates have done before. There was a norm set by his own father. And so you're going to hear the press, the conservative press, the liberal press, the down-the-middle press, all asking for these tax returns until November if we don't get them, just because it's such the norm. He, today, in a letter from his campaign manager responding to a letter from Obama's campaign manager, tried to move the conversation, say it's a distraction. But the press is expecting to see them. The press has expected to see them. A lot of people in South Carolina, when it became an issue during the primary, said, oh, well, he'll have to release them before the general gets going. And because that hasn't happened, I don't know that the press is even going to let it go, just because it's such a norm in presidential campaigns to see several years' worth of tax reforms.
Let's hear from South Carolina. Tom's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Tom, thanks. You're on the air.
Sure. Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I think it is germane. Notice he says 13% in tax, not income tax. How much is that? Is property tax, sales tax, other tax? But to put it another way, what if November 7th was 2000 was the election? What about instead of finding out on the 2nd of November of Bush's DUI, which some may think is trivial, but it's not, shows a recklessness that later came to fruit with Iraq. What if we had known that long before November 2nd? Would there have been enough voters in Florida that the Supreme Court would never got involved because Gore would have been elected? It is very important. Gingrich called him a liar. We now see that the medic welfare work has been totally debunked. I don't trust him.
A trust issue still for you, Tom. And looking back on how little indicators can mean a lot when a president gets in the office, of course, Mitt Romney saying this week, come on, Democrats, and he was going after Biden. We'll talk about that and more.
President Obama as well said, you're dragging this campaign down. We're going to look at that. Here he was Tuesday night in Chillicothe, Ohio, with a stump speech attacking the Obama campaign for resorting to what he called diversions and distractions and defamation.
His campaign and his surrogates have made wild and reckless accusations that disgrace the office of the presidency. Another outrageous charge just came a few hours ago in Virginia, and the White House sinks a little bit lower. This is what an angry and desperate presidency looks like. President Obama knows better, promised better, and America deserves better.
Wild and reckless, angry and desperate. How's that theme rolling, and is it fair, Nia Malika?
Well, you know, again, this gets at that likability gap that Mitt Romney has had for quite some time in this campaign. You look at a poll, and essentially, Obama and Romney are tied on the issue of who better to handle the economy, but Obama has had this huge lead in terms of who people think relates to them, who they like better, who they think can better understand the issues that middle-class folks deal with. And so there you have Mitt Romney trying to chip away at that, trying to cast President Obama as just a regular politician, somebody who has left this idea of hope and change. He's left that, and now he's doing something else, which is running a very negative campaign. I think, you know, listen, I think in politics it's very tough. I remember Barack Obama on the stump campaigning in 2008 talking about the negative nature of, of the campaign, talking about he would always say, I'm skinny, but I'm tough. And I think from liberals and Democratic supporters of this president, they actually like this very tough, hardball campaign, because the rap often on Democrats, on liberals, was that they couldn't play hardball in the way that we often saw from Republican candidates.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Paul Ryan hits the campaign trail, Medicare in the spotlight, Black Hawk down in Afghan allies, killing more Americans, wildfire again. Nia Malika Henderson joins us from The Washington Post. She's been out with Mitt Romney and with Vice President Joe Biden this week. Ginger Gibson is here from Politico. She's been covering the Romney campaign since April. Jack Beatty joins us. President Obama this week in Iowa, big three-day trip across the state he really wants to get again in Dubuque, saying that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan's health care plan would raise costs on senior citizens, dramatically impact the future of Medicare.
My plan's already extended Medicare by nearly a decade. Their plan ends Medicare as we know it. My plan reduces the cost of Medicare by cracking down on fraud and waste and subsidies to insurance companies. Their plan makes seniors pay more so they can give another tax cut to millionaires and billionaires. That's the difference between our plans on Medicare. That's an example of the choice in this election, and that is why I'm running for a second term as President of the United States of America.
Second term, please, in Medicare, right in the middle of everything. Ginger, how's that looking this week? It hasn't been entirely clear what Mitt Romney's actually standing for. He's sometimes said Paul Ryan's plan, sometimes said not Paul Ryan's plan. Lots of accusations that Republicans are eager to make this week against President Obama for shifting funds around. How's this working out?
For the last week, Mitt Romney has said a lot about Medicare without saying much. He said almost identical to Paul Ryan's plan, but not Paul Ryan's plan, but he couldn't tell anyone what the difference between Paul Ryan's plan and his plan is. What we do know is that both he and Paul Ryan support a voucher program that would allow seniors to buy their own insurance and then create restrictions upon the insurance companies to offer certain types of plans, although their plans seem to differ a little bit about what those restrictions on insurance companies would be. They've tried to turn it into an attack on President Obama. Instead of giving us a lot of details on their plan, what exactly it would be, we hear Mitt Romney on the stump every day for the last week accusing President Obama of cutting spending for Medicare and killing the program, making it go bankrupt, as he wrote on his whiteboard yesterday in Greer, South Carolina. So it's become a little bit of a muddle. We don't have a lot of details, but it's an issue that both sides think they can win on. Both sides think that they can appeal to voters with, but we already have seen Ryan's plan is not the most popular when polled against voters.
Here's Mitt Romney in Green Bay, Wisconsin, with ABC Action 2 News, saying that when it comes to Medicare, his plan is very similar to Paul Ryan's.
Actually, Paul Ryan and my plan for Medicare, I think, is the same. If not identical, it's probably close to identical. Our plan is very simple, which is that for people 55 years of age and older, there's no change.
From Mitt Romney, that seemed to be almost the main message you wanted to get out there. Senior voters, there are lots of them. No change, no change. But that charge that the Obama administration was taking from the plan, front and center. Here was Paul Ryan raising that in Ohio on Wednesday.
The president took $716 billion from the Medicare program. He raided it to pay for Obamacare. The president's campaign says that this raid of Medicare to pay for Obamacare, which leads to fewer services for current seniors, is an achievement. Do you think raiding Medicare to pay for Obamacare is an achievement?
No.
Well, neither do I.
Jack, jump in here. I mean, we're hearing all kinds. You know, Paul Ryan had his plan, which took money in a different direction, but almost about the same amount as the Obama, money on in future spending here. There's Paul Ryan going after him hammer and tongs. And the question, you know, America's looking at, who's really stepping up to deal with the deficit? Who's really stepping up to deal with American health care?
Well, that is the question, and neither candidate, neither party really has any substantial program or a program one can believe to bring down the costs of health care. Certainly the Ryan plan has nothing like that. The Obama people say, well, we have this magic board that will standardize Medicare procedures from one place to another, and that'll keep costs down.
Maybe. Magic? I mean, you say magic, but come on, can't we get in there and work on this stuff and bring some intelligence to bear?
All I'm saying is that it's the evidence of things unseen. We haven't had a test of this. Okay. And as for this $716 billion, you know, the Obama people are now running a campaign in which AARP, which is the gold standard for seniors, says, no, believe Obama on this. The $716 billion was basically taken out of subsidies to insurance companies, to providers. Not a thing was taken from current recipients. And, in fact, something was given to them, a substantial effort to close the so-called donut hole in the prescription drug benefit. That's been worth almost $4 billion a year for seniors, and an ending of deductibles and copays for physicals and things like that. So seniors actually gained from that. And then, of course, on the other side, the side of spending, if Mitt Romney puts that $716 back, he then has to by taking that out of Medicare, President Obama extended the life of the program, the trust fund, 8 years. It would go back 8 years to 2016 were Mitt Romney to follow through on his we'll make the program solvent by somehow, I'm not sure how. He would make the program less solvent.
There's a lot of not sure here, certainly on the Romney front. You know, there's sort of a one-page or two-page description, and beyond that, good luck to you. Let's go to Iowa, where everybody's been focusing a lot of attention. Kimberly in Muscatine, Iowa. You're on the air, Kimberly.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Okay.
I think some of this, and I guess I'm mostly talking to my few conservative friends out there that do listen to the program. To me, the Tea Party is starting to drive the Republican, well, it has been in the process of driving the Republican Party in a direction that a lot of people do not want to go. But as long as they're driving the narrative, it's come to my attention after looking at the Ryan plan and Romney's plan. You've got to be careful about getting what you wish for. I mean, I want to really see how all these Tea Party congressmen and women and senators go back to their district and tell their middle-class constituencies, yeah, well, we're going to balance the budget, we're going to give money over here, but you're going to have to give up your tax, mortgage tax deduction on your income
mm-hmm.
tax,
yep.
And we're going to hold, you know, we're going to get rid of minimum wage.
And maybe the deduction for health insurance payments as well. Maybe the tax-free.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What are you worried about there, Kimberly, down the road?
I almost wonder, what would they, you know, none of these senators are going to be wanting to go back to their constituencies and their districts and having to give the bad news like this. How are they going to flip that to sound good? And what are they looking at for reelection?
Well, they're going there on purpose. Let us pick it up. Nia Malika, I mean, this is Mitt Romney knew very well when he chose Paul Ryan, Medicare and budget issues would come front and center, would maybe step in front of. Certainly this week they have the economy story. And in the Ryan plan, it is a story of cuts. He says cuts we need. How do you see it playing, Nia?
That's right. And they think that they're going to get credit for taking on these big issues, taking on entitlement reforms and elevating the conversation. That's what they predicted. I don't know necessarily that it's happened. They have certainly gone on the offense on Medicare, which I think a lot of Republicans wanted to see them do immediately. And they did that. And they have been very effective in making the Obama administration and Democrats go on the defense on this Medicare issue, something I think Democrats didn't anticipate, because they had some success with this race, for instance, in upstate New York, where they were really able to win a seat there based on basically talking about Medicare, framing Republicans as people who wanted to end Medicare as we know it. But this is the debate that we're having at this point. I think it's very unexpected that we're talking about Medicare, and it's going to matter in states like Iowa and states like Florida, where there's such a big senior population, and you wonder if this message of it won't affect people over 55, if that'll even get through. And quite frankly, I think people below, 55 and below would still be concerned about drastic changes on Medicare.
Well, it's kind of a big hello to people below 55. Like, hey, if they're so determined to say it doesn't affect over, you better wake up and smell the coffee if you're under, I guess. Derek in Ayer, Massachusetts. Derek, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
The point I would like to make is it seems that every time the Republicans use rhetoric like Obama stole something, like he's a petty thief to put towards something else, whenever the Democrats then turn around and say something on a defense about them, it's beneath the office of the presidency.
It's a disgrace to the White House. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, Derek, you're on to something. I mean, there's a lot of down and dirty language here. That's true. On the other hand, Biden and Obama both this week saying, look, if you want to really talk about these things, you got to be ready to be tough. I mean, here was Joe Biden shooting back at Mitt Romney on the remark about Wall Street and chains.
I got a message for him. If you want to know what's outrageous, it's their policies and the effects of their policies on middle-class America. That's what's outrageous.
Joe Biden there. Got to ask, let's go to Beth in Schenectady, New York. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, I'm going to start with this is Boston.com. It mentions that I'm trying to paraphrase to not steal it directly.
Okay.
Congressional Democrats and Obama White House chose to pay for nearly half of the cost of the ACA by reducing Medicare's expected rate of growth. So that is still raiding Medicare. They can't have it both ways. You can't say, oh, I've covered more people with Medicare, but no doctor is going to take it. And the thing about a free, visit to the doctor, ooh, I can go get, Democrats like to use the car analogy. Well, you can go to 99% of garages and get your car looked at for free. That's not what's going to be the problem. The problem is, after they look at the car, how much it costs, and this is not covered under the ACA, to get the problems taken care of.
ACA, the Obama health care reforms. Ginger Gibson, what about it? I mean, President Obama says, look, I'm not taking this out of your health care. I'm going in there and pushing down costs for health care delivery, which we manifestly need to do. Now, Beth in Schenectady says still looks like theft to her. On the other hand, you heard Derek say, stop using this kind of language about the president.
I think you've got one thing right, which is there's language coming from both sides that has raised a lot of eyebrows. This is not what one would call a nice campaign. But when we look at this fight over the Medicare cuts, the fight over the health care law, we can see that the president's in a little bit of a tough spot. They're talking about the health care law. They've got an ad that that cites it. But it's not an intricate part of their message. It's not something that's center and focus.
Mm-hmm.
And to respond to some of these attacks about the cuts to Medicare requires explaining how they work with his health care law. And that puts them in a little bit of a tough spot. They aren't getting into depth on that. And so we haven't seen those types of explanation, but the AARP ad is really strong. As I said already, that's the sort of thing that seniors are looking to. That's the sort of standard and who to believe on this fight, and it could have a big effect. But you hear Republicans say enough time that they stole $716 billion, and that message really breaks through.
Nia Malika, I want to go back to Joe Biden and that moment where he's, you know, doing his big orator thing and raising his fist and saying, you know, they want to unchain Wall Street. They're going to put you back in chains. And he said that to a largely African-American crowd in Virginia. And we heard at the top of the hour the response he got there. The response from Republicans was huge. You're playing the race card. This is way out of bounds. Give us some perspective here.
Well, I think when his aides heard him say that, they knew it was going to be a problem. He had been saying something similar to that, but using different phrasing, using the phrase unshackled, and then saying, you know, they want to bind you, they want to shackle you in terms of
what's Wall
Street
the difference? Shackle chain, if you're wearing one, it doesn't feel good.
Right. Talking about Wall Street reforms, I think obviously the fact that he said it in front of a predominantly African-American crowd, then you put two and two together, and people said that he was using this racially inflammatory rhetoric. But I was so surprised that they didn't in any way really back down from this. You had President Obama give an interview to People and say, oh, well, he, you know, the wording wasn't right, but the underlying, you know, theme was exactly right. So this is a campaign. I think they very much want to use Joe Biden in areas, in rural areas, in front of African-American crowds, in front of Latino crowds, in front of blue-collar whites, because they think that he has an appeal to those crowds. And certainly when you're there, they have an affection and an attachment to this vice president. Of course, you've heard all of this chatter, mainly from Republicans, sort of joking about, oh, well, maybe they should pull Joe Biden from the ticket and put Hillary Clinton in that role instead. And you know, some people saying that he should step down. But listen, this is a vice president that they feel like very much inspires the base. And again, this is a base election, and they think Joe Biden's the guy they need.
He said, I'm not pulling back a bit here. Looked a little lathered up, though, this week. Paul in Hudson Valley, New York. Paul, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I'm glad you guys are talking about this. I thought a lot of people missed a couple points here.
Okay.
One is, he was speaking in Danville, Virginia, just above the border with North Carolina. Danville, Virginia is one of the epicenters of the Confederacy and the KKK and racism. For 150 years, it's where the gold stash is that's going to be used to raise the Confederacy again. Joe Biden credit for talking like that right in Danville.
So you say legitimate right there. All right. Let me get one more. Tri-Cities, Washington State, way out in, too many wildfires this week. Jane, thanks for calling, Jane. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
I'm longtime listener, first-time caller, and I just want to give a shout-out to Jack. Hey, Jack.
Hi. Hey. Love from Washington State. Good. What are you thinking about, Jane?
Yes, we're in the desert part of Washington State.
Oh, good. Okay.
104 here today.
Ooh.
Anyways, Tom, I would like your guest to comment on the Congressional Budget Office analysis they did of Ryan's budget that came out on March 20th. The interpretation from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities said, House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan's new budget plan specifies a long-term spending path under which by 2050, most of the federal government, aside from Social Security, health care, and defense, would cease to exist.
Jane, let me pick it up. Apologize, but we're up against the break. I want to get Jack to comment on that, because Jack, there, look down the road on the Ryan budget plan, and it is true. The strangle it in the bathtub plan, a lot of things Americans think of as elemental to what our government does, would be gone.
Would be gone. And here's a statistic that brings that home. The spending on all discretionary federal programs would be 3.75 of GDP by 2050. The CBO points out, quote, spending in this category has exceeded 8% of GDP in every year since World War II.
The Pentagon alone is more than that. There'd be nothing but us, Social Security, and the military.
That's it.
Never mind
research,
education.
All of that gone.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, more and more wildfires. In Ellensburg, Washington, this man's family lost everything they had to the flames.
We left with the clothes on our back. We have no toothbrushes. We had no soap, no shampoo. Everything's gone.
Longtime iconic editor of Cosmopolitan magazine, Helen Gurley Brown, died this week at 90. She pushed the boundaries. Here's her 1993 advice for a married woman who's not satisfied.
A married man is not so much in demand, and he might possibly be the sexual partner who could see you occasionally. And no, I don't feel any guilt about his wife. I'm a wife. It's up to a wife to keep her husband at home if she can.
And Russian all-girl punk band Pussy Riot was found guilty this morning of hooliganism driven by religious hatred, sentenced to 2 years in prison after protesting Russian President Vladimir Putin in a Moscow cathedral. Their case has raised protests from free speech supporters around the world. In a bad place now, in a country where free speech and civil liberties kind of off the map lately, not a pretty picture. You can see the video of their sort of guerrilla protest in the Moscow Cathedral at our website, onpointradio.org. There's one more piece on the attack front that I do want to get to. This new 20-some-minute video that's been put out by a group of, we're told, retired intelligence officers and military service members criticizing President Obama for taking credit for the death of Osama bin Laden and various leaks associated with the raid. Listen to the tone of this. Ginger, Nia, Jack, this is something this is new to me.
Mr. President, you did not kill Osama bin Laden. America did. The work that the American military has done killed Osama bin Laden. You did not.
Nia Malika Henderson with The Washington Post here. Ginger Gibson with Politico. Ginger, that sort of very bitter tone sort of delivered from a military angle. It's a Navy SEAL reputedly speaking there in the video. Wow, I can't recall seeing that kind of wedge trying to be driven between our commander-in-chief and our armed forces.
They're calling this the swift boat attack for the 2012 elections. What we've seen consistently is President Obama pulling ahead of Mitt Romney when it comes to national security and foreign policy, which is an unusual position for a Democrat. Normally, Republicans win that fight. And because of the Osama bin Laden raid, because of some other decisions we've seen President Obama make, the public is saying that they think he's better equipped on the foreign policy issue, which means he's also come a long way since the 08 election when he was considered very unqualified on foreign policy issues and not having enough experience. This is an attempt, and we saw Mitt Romney in Reno last month trying to paint Barack Obama not as someone who can lead on foreign policy, but as someone who is risking our national security. The leaks issue was one that they brought up. He gave a big speech, suggested that someone in the White House had put American troops in harm's way by giving those leaks. And we didn't hear them talk about it a whole lot since then. But this ad, this very bitter ad, is going to be an attempt to try to get rid of some of that goodwill that the public feels because of that killing. Whether or not it works, we'll have to wait and see. But as it stands right now, President Obama's winning the foreign policy poll.
Jack, we know there's tough stuff in the campaign season, but I have to say I really did not like the tone of this. You don't want to play around here trying to turn your military and your civilian commander-in-chief against one another. And I have not seen accounts that President Obama's role in the killing of Osama bin Laden was not effective. It appears to have been rather effective.
Absolutely. And I think that the ad obviously doesn't like that and wants to muddy that. And unfortunately, this line of attack has been helped by Dianne Feinstein, who's the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, who herself has said, well, these leaks, we really have to look into them. And as I understand it, the leaks, which were mostly to our friend David Sanger of the New York Times, what the Republicans object to is that they made the president look good. Well, that is, if you think killing American citizens who, you know, like a Lockheed without any due process, if you think that's good, it certainly made him look tough. And then there were the inside leaks about the killing of bin Laden.
But can you imagine the hosannas we would have heard if George W. Bush would have killed Osama bin Laden?
Oh,
would we not
my
have
seen those photos? I mean, I want to be fair here, but come on.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, you know, there's a film coming out about this, I think, in October, which is going to be done by the woman who did,
Kurt Locker?
That's the one. And so that's going to...
Oh, from what angle? That's a very powerful film. What's it about?
It's going to heroize the president, I think. It's going to be about the killing of the, you know, it's going to be about the raid.
So here's the advance film to kind of pull the sting of that.
Right.
Wow. Nia Malika, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think one of the disadvantages of this ad in terms of the Republican argument is that it just reminds people that Osama bin Laden is dead and that President Obama had a hand in that he gave the order. So I think ultimately it probably won't really be effective. And as Ginger said, you have had Mitt Romney raise the question of leaks. You've obviously had Dianne Feinstein do the same thing, but it hasn't been consistent. And I think some Republicans are frustrated with Romney's sort of raising things and then dropping them. He's done the same thing with Solyndra, for instance, but there hasn't been like a consistent narrative. And as well, I think there are all of these outside groups, and certainly the Republican groups are so much more well-funded than the Democratic groups. But in some ways, that has been a disadvantage because they're all over the place. They're making all sorts of different arguments about this president, whereas you have the Democratic super PAC ads basically making one argument, which is that Boehner was bad, which is that he isn't a job creator, and that he laid people off and ruined their lives.
Ginger Gibson, speaking of money, Paul Ryan went straight to Las Vegas just a couple of days, 3 days, into his place on the ticket, and met with Sheldon Adelson, huge contributor, tens of millions in this campaign, first to Newt Gingrich and now well beyond that. What about the big money in the Sheldon Adelson conversation as Ginger? Of course, Sheldon, a big supporter of a tough stance, hawkish stance on Israel, Israel looking out at Iran and all the rest. What's the relationship here, Romney, Ryan, Adelson, and how big the money?
Adelson has the ability to write big checks. Lots more big checks. And he said that he's willing to put millions of dollars, maybe into like the $100 million mark, into a campaign after putting quite a bit of money into Newt Gingrich's campaign in the primary. Courting him, having him be happy and comfortable with the VP is important. If he's going to keep writing checks, that kind of comfortableness is pivotal in making sure that Sheldon feels the whole ticket is something he can get behind.
But what does happy and comfortable mean? It sounds like there are policy implications to that. It's not just a tea party. Shall we say.
The fact is that they didn't let us in. Reporters were left standing outside, from what I see, and maybe even wandering the halls of the Venetian trying to find him.
Playing the slots.
Where they were. So no one knows what that conversation was about. But we do know that he made almost a beeline to Las Vegas to meet with Sheldon Adelson.
Boy, money speaks. Jack?
The Times has a really excellent editorial about this today, pointing out that this man is under investigation by the Justice Department and the Securities and Exchange Commission for possibly violating the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act.
Bribing his way into China. Shock,
yes!
Shock. There's bribery in international gambling.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know that happened, but
But he's being investigated, and it is really where we've come in American politics, that there doesn't seem to be an obvious downside to going to be enthralled and kowtow before a man who's being investigated by the Justice Department.
Nia Malika, President Obama is saying this. I mean, we all have to acknowledge everybody has a lot of money in this campaign. The president's saying, but they've got a few more people who can write checks in the tens of millions on the GOP side.
That's right. And I think the GOP side is going to have a huge money advantage, but it might not matter. That was the case, too, I think, for John Kerry in 2004. He had a money advantage there. And again, like I said, I think in some ways the Democratic super PAC, those ads are in some ways much more effective. You've got all this money sloshing around on the GOP side. As for Adelson, you know, I think he is mostly concerned about Israel policy. And when you hear Mitt Romney speak about Israel policy, of course, was over there a few weeks ago and making some comparisons between Israel's culture and Palestinian culture. Mm-hmm. I think that is mostly where the Adelson money and policy sort of intersect. And we'll have to see how the Democrats play this. This idea that in some ways there is this sugar daddy that is funding Romney and his allies.
Listen, I love it when citizens talk with candidates. That's what it's all about. But when they're writing 10 million, you know, multiples of that checks and policy on the line, and we're in a season when there is talk of an Israeli strike on Iran over the nuclear issue that would inevitably draw the U.S. in one way or another. I mean, Jack, this gets into really odd territory when the checks are that big. That's a big megaphone.
Yes, you know, you just can't get around that. And that goes right to the, I think, really, well, I don't want to qualify it, the naivete of Justice Kennedy. I mean, in his opinion in the
Citizens United.
Yeah, he said there's no evidence that contributing to campaigns would create a suspicion of systemic corruption. Corruption is quid pro quo. We don't worry about systemic. There's no evidence that people
and
think
we
worse.
And here we are. Sheldon, it happens to be Israel. It could be some other issue with some other donor, but here we are.
Yes, the sums are so great that quid pro quo, I mean, it seems almost inevitable.
Elaine in Omaha, Nebraska. Elaine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have 4 points to make about the voter ID and voter registration. First of all, if we really want people's votes to count, we should eliminate the Electoral College, because here in Nebraska, for example, we have 5 delegates to the Electoral College, and it's very rare that all the people in Omaha who have voted for the Democrats count, because we don't have...
Elaine, you got 4 points. I barely got 4 minutes. Take us to your bottom line, Elaine.
The second one is, if we're really concerned, we need to deal with those people who own the voting machines, the ones that can be programmed so that they throw the election to the Republicans.
Hey, I really don't know about that. I mean, that starts to get a little wild. But let me go to your point on voters and voter ID law. Of course, this week in Pennsylvania, we had the judge who said, yes, you can have the tougher ID laws. And that's it's under Pennsylvania law, fine. And it's not just that state. Here's one. This was a 94-year-old resident, Bea Buckler, telling CBS how that ruling requiring photo ID to vote would affect her.
I have been voting all of my life, ever since I was old enough to vote. I have voted in every presidential election, and I hope to vote in every one until I die. But I'm afraid I won't be able to vote in this one because I don't have photo ID.
Nia Malika, Republicans say clean voting. Democrats say voter suppression. How do you look at what's going on?
That's right. And you obviously had the judge side with Republicans there. The Democrats had argued that these laws could disenfranchise. I guess there are about 8 million voters there. They had said that they could disenfranchise 9 to 10%. The judge said he thought it would be about 1%, and that it wasn't really a barrier to people going out there and casting their ballots, that it was, in fact, a way to ensure a fair process, even though Democrats argue that there's not much evidence at all of any voter fraud. The problem that Democrats see with this is that it would land heavily on minority communities, inner-city communities, older voters who obviously, in many ways, favor Democratic candidates. But there are actions on the ground in a lot of these states to get these folks voter IDs before this campaign, this election day in November.
But there is a roadblock there at the same time. I want to talk for a minute about the huge lines we saw turn out this week. And however you feel about immigration policy, just at a human level, you couldn't help but see these young people who have grown up in this country and suddenly have a chance to get a 2-year permit to stay on and legally work, get driver's license, and all the rest. It was pretty moving, but not everybody liked it. Arizona Governor Jan Brewer on Wednesday announced she would not grant driver's licenses, public benefits, to undocumented immigrants or those who had been, who were now qualifying to stay in the U.S. under the new Obama program. Here she is.
The Obama amnesty plan, it doesn't make them legally here because they haven't even applied yet for whatever work permits that they're going to go for. So we will issue an employment authorization card to those people that apply, but they will not be entitled to a driver's license, nor will they be entitled to any public benefits.
Arizona, right on the border, the governor, Jan Brewer, you know, resisting the trend, the drift here. Ginger Gibson, clearly the timing of this, yes, there's a humanitarian element to this, but the DREAM Act didn't go through. President Obama very aware of the Hispanic vote, but so the Romney campaign. How do you think this one plays out?
The Romney campaign has been hemorrhaging Hispanic support, watching those numbers get worse and worse since President Obama made that announcement. And now, looking at it sort of go into effect, what you described is sort of a moving scene, seeing all these young people line up to get approval to stay in the country, to have work permits. It's going to have sort of a cerebral effect on people. And the Obama campaign is going to try to tap into that. We saw Governor Romney with Marco Rubio in Miami making an appeal to voters in Miami this week, trying to make himself out to be the economic savior of the Hispanic population. That's a message they've been pushing, trying to stay away from the immigration issue and talk about jobs instead. But it hasn't been effective. They've watched those numbers get worse and worse as the weeks have gone by.
So with all of this, so much going on, we didn't even get to the cluster of galaxies spewing out stars, or Julian Assange in his little asylum headquarters in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. But Nia Malika, how do you see the race trending right now? It seems really up in the air this week.
Yeah, it's neck and neck. I guess you have about 3 to 5% of undecided voters. So all of this, you know, the rest of this money, I think it's $2 billion that they think these campaigns are going to spend on this election. That is going to go to persuading a very few small population of people in these 9 to 10 swing states. I think we'll have to see over the next 2 or 3 weeks how the conventions actually change the narrative. Does Mitt Romney get a convention bump out of Tampa? And then, of course, you have President Obama coming the week after and to see what sort of bump he's able to get. And then, of course, on to the debates in October.
I'm going to give the last word here to Ann Romney on NBC's Rock Center with Natalie Morales.
We have a reason why we're running, and it's because I believe in my heart that Mitt is going to save America, that economically we are in such difficult times, and that he is the person that's going to pull us through this.
Jack, Mitt Romney's going to save America. His wife told us so.
It's absolutely. But you know, she seems to be the one Republican this week who's talking about jobs and the economy.
Yeah, and stand by your man. Well, as a man, as men, we might like that. And Romney right there on her husband. She believes, and she's not alone. Nia Malika Henderson with The Washington Post, thank you very much for being with us today. Great to have you.
Thank you.
And Ginger Gibson with Politico, national political reporter there. We'll keep reading your reporting. Thanks for joining us, Ginger.
Thanks for having me.
Jack, great to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.